Bandwidth for this podcast is provided by CacheFly at cachefly.com. This is the iPhone Alley Podcast, episode 38 for April 11th, 2009. Jeff Gamet, the virus you want to catch. All right, it is time for the iPhone LA Podcast. I'm Michael Johnston, and we are here to talk about the iPhone, the iPod Touch, iTunes, Easter Bunnies, Jeff, all that stuff. With me here, as always, the man who holds it together for us, Jeff Gamet. Hello, Jeff.
You know, we are in a world of hurt if I'm the man that's holding it all together.
We trust you, Jeff. You're a cuddly fella. And I can get behind that.
What's the line from Airplane? We're all counting on you.
Yeah. And also, here is Adam Christensen from the Maccast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing? I'm counting on coffee and peeps to keep me going.
Yeah, me too. And tea. So tonight we're talking about the iPhone, I think. Let's talk about some next-gen iPhone stuff. We've seen some bits of, I guess, they're configuration files that mention a next generation iPhone, an iPhone that doesn't currently exist as far as we know. Ars Technica, I believe, was the one who first reported on this, that there are unique identifiers in the iPhone software that, you know, tells the computer, hey, you know, this is what I am. I'm an iPhone and this is what I do. And so that kind of links up to the unique identifier. And there are unique identifiers that, we aren't aware of right now. And so I think the first iPhone was iPhone 1.2? I can't remember.
1.1, I think.
1.1. And so the iPhone 3G is 1.2.
That's right.
And so now we're seeing iPhone 2.1 and iPhone 3.1.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah. So what do you guys think? Apple... working on something. Do you think we're going to see more than one iPhone, a new iPhone, just one? We're going to see more than one new iPhone soon?
Isn't there some speculation that the 3.1 is like a whole nother, that whole nother device that everybody wants?
The magical device that we are so stoked about that we don't even know what it's going to
exactly.
be?
Exactly.
Yeah, the iUnicorn, that's what it is. It will be magical, and it will be filled with happiness and happy.
Yeah, I would like an iUnicorn, as long as it has multi-touch. I assume it would.
They prefer it that way.
Yeah. That app is going to be written very soon for the iPhone.
No, I mean, is it, it's funny because we're joking about this, but this story really, is it any surprise that Apple's working on something and that, I mean, that's,
right.
The last couple of weeks I've been reading all this stuff and everything just seems obvious in terms of the next generation iPhone, you know, sort of the features. I'm not really hearing anything that I would have gone, oh, well, you know, they're not doing that.
Yeah.
So
the, I guess the time period, whatever you call it, the way they introduce new products, it seems like the iPhone's going to be a June, July, product revamp every year. And so we're expecting, you know, an announcement at WWDC as we saw last year. And so I guess one of the other things that we've seen rumored, we would see maybe a 32 gigabyte iPhone and a low-end 16 gigabyte. I would love that. Frankly, you know, I would love even more than 32 gigs. You know, if I could just put my iPod to rest in my room and never have to bring it out again and just have my iPhone with all of my music, that'd be fantastic. So have we been keeping an eye on, you know, I guess the big thing with the flash memory is, you know, how much can you cram in there?
Well, and also how much can Apple get their hands on? I mean, this stuff's, Apple's using so much of it, it's starting to get somewhat short supply, and as Apple uses up more and the supply dwindles, the pricing goes up, you know, would in theory go up. I don't know if it's going up yet, but, you know, scarcity is going to breed more expensive flash memory, which then, you know, and then they also have to garner that with what kind of demand are we going to have for this next-gen phone? And everything I'm reading is that they're really ramping up production right now, and they're expecting huge demand. And I know if it's announced, my contract's up in October, so I'll be able to get a new phone about that time frame. So I will certainly upgrade when, you know, it's feasible to do so, because my contract's up and I can get the subsidized price.
I think that you'd probably be able to get the subsidized price anyway. I mean, they did that this last for the iPhone 3G. If you had a first generation iPhone, you could just re-extend your contract, and, you know.
Well, then I'll be getting it sooner, and I'll be even happier.
Yeah. Do we think we're going to see lines again this year?
Of course, we'll see lines.
I hope so. Oh, yeah. I love the lines. Honestly, it's a lot of fun to stay up all night and look horrible, and then have everybody clap and take your picture of you buying an iPhone.
Yeah, and I'm the guy that's standing there taking the pictures.
Actually, the Apple Store staff took my picture just because I was, I guess I ended up being the first person. I wasn't technically the first person in line, but I guess, I don't know, they got me through fast enough that I was the first person with an iPhone that, you know, I had been up all night. There's no way I'm, you know, there were rainstorms and we were outside and trying to avoid that and all that stuff. So there was no sleep. But it's a lot of fun because you meet people who are, you know, just as nerdy as you are, nerdy enough to stay up all night outside of a mall and waiting for a phone. So I'm looking forward to that.
You know, what I do when the new iPhone launches, every time it's launched, I go and hang out with the crowds at one of the Apple stores in the Denver area the night before it comes out. Then I go home and go to bed. Then I get up in the morning and go back before the store opens and hang with the crowd again and, you know, take some pictures, write an article. And so I think I get the best of both worlds during an iPhone launch, because I get to sleep in my nice, warm, comfy bed, but I also get to hang out with all the cool people that are all excited to be the first to get their hands on the new iPhone.
See, that's practical, Jeff. You know me. That's not something I do. I'm not practical at all.
No. You know, so if I was living in the same city as you, I would come visit you in line and then go home, sleep, and come back and visit you again.
That'd be nice. I would like a visit from you, Jeff.
I think it would be lots of fun.
But the only problem with me doing that, it sounds great, but there's no Apple Store near me. It's an hour drive from where we are. So, yeah. Although there is an AT&T store that we could just do that with. But, you know, it's an AT&T store. You want to wait outside the Apple Store.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor soul.
I feel kind of bad for you. You have to drive an hour?
Yeah.
I mean, the closest Apple Store to me, it's the Flatiron Crossing Apple Store, and it's like 10 minutes from where I live. And then if I want to drive another, say, 10 minutes, I'll be at the Boulder Apple Store. I am spoiled.
You are.
Ooh, I win. I have five within an hour.
Well, you're in California. That doesn't count.
Okay. Well, okay. So I'm not as good as California with Apple stores, but I can be to the Aspen Grove store in about 30 minutes. I can be to the Park Meadows store in about 35 or 40 minutes.
Ooh,
the
he's
Cherry
catching
Creek
up.
Store in about 30 minutes. Colorado Springs, though, that one's going to take me about 45 minutes or an hour.
Oh, so you got me beat. Well, that was like six, right? Or was that five?
Who's counting?
Who's counting? We all have lots
Michael.
Of Apple stores except for Michael. That's what really counts.
Just silently weeping. We're also going to see, we've heard rumors of 802.11n support in the next-gen iPhone. Is that something we need? Or is it really going to be a big deal at all? I guess N is, you know, technically it's the next generation thing, but does it take more battery life, or is it more efficient?
That's the thing in my mind. I think N is the next evolution of the feature you'd want to see, right? It's the next standard of Wi-Fi.
Longer distance and better speed.
Time.
Yeah.
Huh?
Longer distance and better speed.
Yeah. And so the question is exactly what's it going to do to battery life? And has Apple got that sorted out? And I honestly don't know from a technical standpoint, but I would assume that if they're going to put N in there, they're not going to do it at the detriment of the battery. Because, frankly, for me, I haven't really found personal limitations with G, at least with the feature set. And I can't think of anything that's been rumored in the new features for the phone or the new software that would necessarily require that you have N, unless maybe some of the video stuff they're talking about, streaming video over Wi-Fi. It's the only thing I can think of.
That's the only thing I can think of also. And the scenario I'm picturing isn't so much, hey, I'm going to sit here and watch Battlestar Galactica reruns streamed over the internet to my iPhone. I was thinking of it more as, hey, I've got this really cool content on my iPhone, and I'm at my friend's house, and they have an Apple TV. Let's play the videos that I have full screen.
Right.
I think it would definitely be better for that.
Yeah, I think you might go both ways. And the other thing is, and again, I just haven't heard this as a rumored new feature. Everybody's always said they want the ability to sync over Wi-Fi, potentially. And with N, you could maybe start to realistically think about that.
Well, we're doing syncing, you know, of the obvious stuff right now with MobileMe as far as contacts and calendars and that kind of stuff. But I guess you're talking about video and, you know, iPod stuff.
Yeah, to iTunes. So basically, can I not have to dock my iPhone into anything other than a charger and have my audio and my video and stuff sync to my iPhone?
You know, I would love that because I live in a USB port deficit office and I'm always having to juggle devices. And this is even after I went out the other day and bought a second USB hub. So I added an additional 7 USB ports to my setup, not having to plug in my iPhone to my computer for anything would absolutely rock. And then I can just have my separate charger plugged in somewhere else and keep my iPhone juiced up that way. I would love that.
Well, another really great thing, I think the next step for the wireless stuff is having your iPhone back up over the Wi-Fi, because you know that, you know, you don't really think about it until your iPhone gets really sluggish or craps out or just whatever, and you need to restore from your backup. And now with MobileMe, I used to religiously sync my phone all the time because, you know, you want to get your contacts and calendars and all that stuff backed up. But now with the MobileMe, I don't plug in my phone as often as I used to. So it's not as current on the backups anymore. And, you know, I'm doing stuff with, you know, upgrading to 3.0 and downgrading and, you know, breaking phones and all that kind of stuff. So I may be more susceptible to, you know, needing a fresh backup. But, you know, that's a really important thing to have, especially, you know, it's a phone. You may lose it, you may drop it, you know, stuff happens. And that backup is really important when you need it.
Yeah, it is. And I'm in the same boat you are. I don't back up nearly as often as I used to. I'll plug my iPhone into my computer only a couple times a week, and I actually have to think about doing it. And that actually, I did it right before we started podcasting because I hadn't plugged my iPhone in for probably about a week.
Yeah, I backed up before I upgraded to 2.0, the beta 2, to try it out. You know, as you would think, that's the smart thing to do. So I backed up, upgraded, and then I went on my merry way for, you know, a day or so until I realized it's still too buggy to even mess with. You know, I've got to test out applications, so I, you know, some of them don't even run. So I had to downgrade, and I thought, okay, well, I have my backup. And of course, because I had synced with 3.0, it changed the backup structure. And so I downgraded, and then it said, no, this isn't going to work on your phone. So I had to, to do hours and hours and hours of research and reading articles by Erica Sadoun about how the iPhone backs itself up and what the file structure is. And so I figured out how to extract a property list from the backup file that is essentially a giant map, an index of what each of these little files are. And so it's really just, it takes any file and renames the extension to like MD data. So if you know what the file is supposed to be, you can rename it, and then ta-da, there it is. So I did a lot of jailbreaking and moving files and backing up and restoring. It was lots and lots of fun.
So you actually were able to restore back to 2.2 from the 3.0 beta?
Right. And so the way you do that, and this is for the developers and not for the people who illegitimately have 3.0.
Right.
to downgrade, you throw your phone into DFU mode, do the restore, and then it'll error out. And then what you do is you have to use QuickPwn on a PC. I've actually been able to do it with Parallels, but you have it running and you plug in your phone. And I found that if you just reboot your phone like maybe two times with it plugged in and with QuickPwn running, it does the magic that needs to happen on the phone that says, yeah, it's fine to restore it. Because what happens in the restore process is it tosses the entire OS back on there and does all the stuff. And then the last thing it does is tries to upgrade the baseband, the cell modem, but it's already at a newer version. So it goes, you know, this isn't right. I'm going to stop here. And then it does the error. So you've already got the operating system on there. It just doesn't have the bit flipped that says, okay, you can, you know, finish booting. So the QuickPwn does that. And if you understand any of that, then I'm sure you find it useful. Otherwise,
wow, that sounds like a weekend loss that I wouldn't want to bother with.
Oh yeah,
I'm with you, Adam.
I'm planning to get a development phone because I'm actually working with a developer on some interface stuff. So speaking of which, we were discussing tethering last week with Jason Snell and Jeff. You were with us last week, right? Or well. Last show. It wasn't last
week. Last show, right.
Yeah.
Right.
So in the meantime, a developer who's done some really beautiful iPhone apps, I have to say, figured out how to enable tethering on the iPhone 3G because, as we discussed, the capability is in there. It's just disabled in general, and it has to be enabled on a carrier-by-carrier basis. And because he figured out that the carrier update that we had, you know, a month ago or so for AT&T customers, that actually allows you to write some, that overwrites some carrier information. And he found out after digging around in property lists and stuff like that, if you tweak it in just the right way and then you repackage it up and say, hey, iPhone, here's a new carrier update. And it'll take that and then boom, there's your little, you know, on-off setting in the carrier settings to enable tethering. And it's very, very nice. It's pretty much exactly the way we thought it would work. It's you just plug in via USB and it shows up as a USB Ethernet device. And
that's very cool.
You can continue using your phone for anything. It's just got a little blue bar at the top that indicates that it's using the tethered mode. And absolutely everything, you know, as far as accessing the internet goes, works on your computer. It's not, you know, one of those really irritating proxy things like NetShare. It doesn't allow you to get to some stuff and you have to set up proxies for chat and, you know, FTP doesn't necessarily work and all that stuff. This works with everything. It just works the way you would expect it to. So it's really great to have that. And you can also do it over Bluetooth, but it's been tricky. And of course it's a beta. So, but it's very cool. And I'm looking forward to that. Hopefully the little loophole or the hole in the software that allows that to happen without carrier approval stays in there through to the Gold Master 3.0, because I would love to use that. It's very handy. Okay, so
can we steer it back to, I think we kind of got away from the next gen iPhone features. So
yeah, I was about you want to bring something up?
Oh, I was just going to say, I'd love to get your guys' thoughts on, you know, sort of what the rumors are and what we think is likely to happen and maybe not so likely to happen. So I don't know if you just want to run down the feature list for people who haven't heard about them yet.
Yeah. So
we already talked about 802.11n.
Yep. The 32 gig one. We're looking at possibly video recording, an autofocus camera, a digital compass in there, voice control, 3.2 megapixel cameras. All that stuff. So it looks like it's almost for sure we're going to see video recording in the next iPhone as far as what we can see, because there are screenshots that indicate video recording and possibly video editing as well.
Yeah. Do you think that's something we want or need? Or
The video recording? Yeah, definitely. I think we've discussed the cheap phones that hardly do anything that can record video, you know, and what I've played with as far as the voice memos app goes, it's very easy to trim down a voice memo using that software. It's just a, you know, you trim down the end, the beginning and the end, and ta-da, there's your edited version. So I think it's not going to be that, you know, it's not going to be a lot of video editing. It's just going to be trimming it down. But I'm really excited about the autofocus camera, because that truly opens up a whole new genre of applications that can be created. Especially I talked to, the I can't remember his name at Delicious Monster,
Will Shipley.
Will Shipley. I talked to Will Shipley at Macworld, and he was telling me how difficult it is to work with a camera that doesn't autofocus because you, know, you scan barcodes with Delicious Library. And so, you know, he knows how to do that with, you know, the iPhone, and he's been working on some stuff. And actually, I'll try and toss up that interview soon. But yeah, with an autofocus camera, that makes it easy for just about any developer to do some really interesting things with, you know, scanning barcodes and other stuff.
You know, one thing that I think would be cool with that, this is going more towards the creative end of things. If you can autofocus the camera, that means you can probably also manually focus the camera, which then means that you can do like macro shots with your iPhone.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be really great. And for me, it would be really cool because I periodically find these weird spiders in my house and I want to take a picture of them and then tweet the picture and crowdsource to figure out what the spider is. But it's always a pain because the iPhone camera is focusing on the wrong thing. I can't get it to focus on the spider. But if I had a little focus slider on the iPhone, well, okay, I could do like a macro shot and then get just that spider in focus. And then all you people out there could tell me what kind of spiders are getting in my house.
The spider experts. I told you about my my $3 Fresnel lens hack.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been using that. It'll be nice to not to have to use that anymore because that's a little tricky and you sometimes get some weird distortion. It works in a pinch, but it certainly isn't great. And I know some people like the eye clarify case for that, but
yeah,
it's going to be nice to not to have a hack.
Definitely.
I agree.
Question on the so I'm curious on the video because, you know, I have a Flip Mino that I absolutely love. And I'm just trying to, when I'm thinking about video on the iPhone, do you think this is something that's going to compete with that or people are going to use in lieu? Or is it going to be more like how I use my iPhone camera today where I have, you know, I have a point and shoot that I generally have with me. But if I don't, then the iPhone works in a pinch. But I never really rely on the iPhone as my main camera. Do you think people would rely on their iPhone as their main kind of video quicks, you know, take some videos when you're out and about, or you think it's the same kind of behavior? It's like supplemental camera.
You know, I'm thinking for people that just can't afford extra gear, it would be their primary camera, which is how I'm assuming some people are using the iPhone today. However, for most people, I see it as a supplemental camera. And that's exactly how I use my iPhone. I'm using it just like you are. It's yeah. It's the camera I use in a pinch. And if it had video support, it would be the video camera in a pinch. And, you know, and honestly, I'm thinking the main reason Apple would put video support in the iPhone isn't so much because customers are clamoring for it. I think it's because Apple is now in the position where they have to make sure that they're really competing on a feature level with the other smartphones that are out there, especially with the Palm Pre coming out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think a lot of these things that you're seeing, like the digital compass, you know, when I heard about that, that's a feature that's in the G1 and is pretty cool. Because you can do things with like the Google Street View as you move the phone around, the Street View moves because it knows what direction you're facing. So, and voice control, same thing. Apple just needs to get that feature parity. So I'm as Michael's going through that list, and when I first read it, I was like, okay, yeah, they're just trying to bring a lot of things into feature parity with some of the other smartphones that are on the market. The only question I had with one of those features that's related to kind of this idea of getting into feature parity is the 3.2 megapixel camera. That's a nice upgrade, but is it enough? Because you got phones out there that have 5 megapixel cameras and some higher. Is 3.2 enough of an improvement?
If you don't have the ability to focus, I don't think it matters. So, you know, it's a camera in a phone. And if I want to have a really high quality lens, I'm pulling out an actual camera. So from my perspective, 3.2 megapixels is plenty, but I can see why Apple would consider putting a higher resolution camera into the iPhone simply because people pay attention to the numbers. And if if 3.2 is better than 2, well, then 5 must be way better than 3.2. And if you ask people what that is, they'll go, well, it's 5. 5 what? It's 5. Most people don't know what that means.
Well, I think that that we're sourcing Digitimes on this one. Apple's also ordering a 5-megapixel cameras, but they suspect that it's for a completely different device.
That 3.1 device.
Yeah, the magical unicorn device.
Right. Now, one thing to keep in mind with Digitimes is that they have a very consistent track record of being wrong. So they might have part of the info right, but I never take anything Digitimes says at face value, not because I think they're trying to mislead people, but I think that they get information that isn't exactly correct all the time, or they might be misinterpreting the information they're getting.
Right. Now, what's holding back Apple from putting in a 5-megapixel camera into the iPhone? Because it doesn't seem like, you know, it goes from 2 to 3.2. It doesn't, you know, that's not a huge wow thing. Maybe going from 2 to 5 is a bigger bang for saying, you know, that, you know, the new iPhone has this one as well. Is it sensor size, Jeff?
I think it's cost.
You think it's cost?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay.
I think too that Jeff hit on a good point, and that is, you know, Apple is, it does seem like we talked about that they're using some of these features to bring the iPhone in feature parity, but they're also, I mean, look at how they've handled GPS and turn by turn and all that stuff. They're also very deliberate, and they kind of look at the market and they look at how people are using the devices. And I think they probably see what we already discussed is most of us, most people I know, aren't going to rely on their camera phone as their main camera. So Apple can do more with their marketing and kind of selling things to convince people that they have this ability to convince us that, you know what, you don't need 5. 3.2 is good enough because we say it's good enough.
Right.
and you know, that's something that's exclusive, I think, to Apple owners and iPhone owners. I don't know how much of a sell it is for all those people that have, you know, iPhones that are running Windows, but we kind of just nod our heads and go, yeah.
iPhones, you know, that are running Windows?
Windows users that are using iPhones. Okay. Sorry, did I say that? I probably said it wrong.
Yeah, I'm making fun of you.
Okay, now the funny thing is, when you said it wrong, my head fixed it, so I didn't realize you had said it wrong. What I heard was what you meant.
Yeah, what I meant to say. But I mean, the point is at the end of the day, when you really get down to it, 3.2 is good enough for a camera phone. Most people are going to be sending them on MMS, and, you know, new feature in the 3.0, which, thank goodness, that's finally in there. I don't know why that took so long, but you know, most people I know that are taking pictures with their camera phone aren't, you know, running out and doing 8x10 blowups.
Right. And I think that, you know, if we're talking about competing with the Pre has a 3.2 megapixel, right?
Right.
Yeah. So
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
So, okay, Jeff, these are for you. Do you think the digital compass that we're hearing about, does that help GPS at all?
Absolutely. That's a huge thing.
Could you explain how that helps?
Okay. So if you look at a lot of GPSs, they also have what's called a digital compass. Now, when you have a GPS, it's doing a location acquisition. So it's the physical position you are in. When you have a digital compass, it's showing the physical direction you are facing, which is not the same thing as the location you're at, because you can face any direction wherever you're at. So the digital compass allows you to see what direction you're facing without having to actually start moving, and then let the GPS extrapolate from your movement which direction you're traveling, which also typically would be which direction you're facing.
So that's mostly for providing directions.
So it's going to be for providing directions, and it will also make it much easier for developers to be able to create applications that give you directions. And instead of saying, okay, what you need to do is walk 3 blocks and turn left, it can now say what you need to do is turn around so you're facing the right direction, walk 3 blocks and turn left.
Right, yeah. Yeah, because that's always a tough thing to do if you've ever been on the highway and says, you know, turn around and do this, or if you're not necessarily on the highway and it assumes that you're on the highway traveling in a certain direction, it gets a little confusing. You have to kind of read between the lines of your iPhone's directions sometimes. So that's a little irritating. Do we think that...
And it also gives you the ability to know what direction you're facing, even if you can't get a GPS acquisition.
Yeah.
And so now that can happen, say, now where I've experienced this most is when you're in the mountains and you go into a narrow canyon and you're down low and you don't have enough horizon to be able to see satellites. And so you don't have a line of sight to the satellites. You don't have a signal. You don't know where you are. You could also get the same thing, say, if you go into a big city where you have lots of skyscrapers and yep. you happen to stand in just the right place where the buildings are blocking all the satellites.
Yeah, it's,
okay.
I was just going to say, it's really fun to see. You know, I went down to Chicago and had my GPS going, and the little blue dot just jumped all over the place. It did not know. It had no idea where it was.
Right. And a digital compass is still going to know at least what direction you're traveling, because right. that's not based on the satellites.
Yeah.
Now, what I want to know and what I would be excited about is, do you guys remember when the iPhone was first announced? There was some developer at some conference that showed an augmented reality app with like video. You guys know what I'm talking about by augmented reality?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that the one where you're walking along holding up your iPhone and it's telling you all the products that are around you? And
yes, yeah, exactly. Kind of, or like this store is here, that cool. store is there. And so
yes.
that compass feature you have to have for that kind of thing to work, because it has to know. So that you can use the GPS to say, okay, you're at this location, but now which way you're facing. And now I can overlay this data, this extra data. And it could be all kinds of, things, you know, not just product data, but I mean, you name it, the ATM's over here. Oh, and this is your bank and this much money is in your bank account. You want to get some out now? That sort of stuff. So yeah. It could be very interesting.
Now, Apple did announce that they're going to allow access to the Maps API in 3.0. And I guess you are allowed to use the actual Google Maps for just standard maps, but you can't use Google Maps for turn-by-turn due to licensing. Now, I'm wondering... Right. Do you think Apple's going to include their own turn-by-turn stuff in 3.0?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think they have a reason to, because you're going to have companies like Garmin and Magellan and these guys that are going to come out with great third-party apps, and they already have a lot of experience and they already have the maps
right.
That they'll be able to load on the phone, and you'll be able to buy maps within the... You know, within the application itself. So if you go to an area where you don't have a map, they have that new, you know, buy in the application feature. It'll download right there. So I don't see the reason for Apple to want to build in turn by turn.
Yeah. So what about do you think that developers will have access to the new video capabilities? And is it, you know, I guess they would announce that at WWDC, which makes sense. And then so if we look at what happened last year, it was announced early, I guess, was WWDC in July last year?
I don't remember. I remember it was later than we thought it would be.
Right. I think it was yeah. July.
And so then it might have been July.
So what month is it this year?
It's June. And it's actually earlier, a little bit earlier than normal this year,
right.
from what okay. I understand.
So I guess, you know, what would make sense is maybe they're going to, you know, do WWDC and then say, you know, here's the new iPhone. It has, you know, these extra features, and go as far as, you know, developers who want to use the extra features in their applications. So if, you know, developers such as Quick maybe want to use the video stuff. Yeah. June 8th through 8 through 12. So maybe that'll be, you know, enough time for those developers to get their stuff ready for what we would assume would be a July iPhone launch.
That would make sense.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, for an iPhone launch, Phil Schiller has kind of set up an expectation for us, because during Macworld Expo in January, he did make a reference to Apple's traditional time frame for product releases.
Right.
And it was phrased in such a way, and in context with the iPhone, to imply that Apple has an annual product refresh cycle for the iPhone.
Right.
Which would be that June-ish window.
Yeah. So how do you guys feel about the MMS stuff? Is that, you know, I guess there's going to be video MMS and anti-phishing. We're going to have more pages of applications, 11 pages now. I think right now we're at 9. Although I think the Springboard can't really handle that many applications. It gets really sluggish.
Yeah, I know. Mine's pretty sluggish right now.
Yeah, so we're going to see the video MMS stuff. That's going to be fun, I guess. There's a standard for MMS video to come through, and so the iPhone will be able to play that, and you can send it. So you won't feel like a total loser when you say, oh, don't send me an MMS, or I couldn't see that picture, or whatever. We already talked about MMS, though. Push notifications are available for developers to start testing. As I found out, however, last night, I'm working with one of the developers on an app that uses push notifications. They got it working and then sent out an ad hoc build to the guys on the beta team, and found out that the ad hoc stuff uses the production server, which is not up right now. So,
whoops.
Yeah.
That makes that kind of hard to test.
Yeah. So, yeah, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So hopefully Apple is planning to get those up and running. I mean, you'd kind of want to test the production server as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess no one can really talk about that. I'm just curious,
I'll talk about as much as I can.
Well, you can't talk about probably how it works in terms of within the application controlling that feature, because Apple hasn't really said anything about that. But I would hope that app by app, and maybe even within types of notifications, developers have the ability to shut those off. Because I'm just imagining, when I start thinking about push notification, especially a notification that would pop up something, I think of my Growl experience on the Mac, and why I really hate Growl, because like every application has access to Growl, and if you have it turned on and you don't remember to turn it on with the application, suddenly I can't get any work done, because every app is throwing up a window every 2 seconds telling me that it's doing something, that some message came in, or some status got updated, and I find it just infuriating. And, if every developer suddenly jumps on push notifications and has alert box popping up in the background, constantly, with the number of apps that I have on my phone, my phone would essentially become unusable.
I'm guessing that it'll be kind of like an opt-in type thing, kind of in the same way that it asks you if you want to use your location.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hopefully.
But and even just still I to have okay to go and that. Make sure you turn that off and manage it. I have to wait till the experience comes out before I make a judgment. I just say at this point I have concerns.
Yeah, and you got to keep in mind that not every developer can just hop right onto this. They have to have their own server to talk to the Apple push notifications server to go in between it, and which would limit it to limit it down quite a bit. So you don't have the 14-year-olds who are writing fart apps, I assume you don't have fart apps on it. Giving what I wonder what kind of notification would be sent from a fart application. But
it would tell you that you have gas.
That'd be the only one. And
yeah, or that your friends that also have the fart app.
Your friend has just farted.
Yes, your
well,
friend
you could finally enable the, maybe the silent but deadly fart in the fart app, because it could creep up on you and then just be like, I'm here.
Yeah.
That is so not right.
So Apple's doing a 1 billionth application countdown promotion. They're giving away a MacBook Pro,
$10,000 iTunes gift certificate,
iPod Touch.
Yeah, 32 gig iPod Touch and time capsule, I believe.
Yeah. So, and I don't think it's if you're the billionth person to download the application. I think it's just everyone who starts, anyone who buys an application starting today, you're entered into the competition.
There's I'm also assuming free that's how, entries.
Yeah, because of the free entries.
Yep.
And people can do up to 25 a day.
Yes.
I hope people aren't buying. Well, do you have to actually purchase an application, or is it?
Form. Form. There's a form you can fill out on Apple's website.
Do free apps count, right? Because I guess it's just an application download thing, right?
As far as I know, it's just an application download.
Okay.
What I want to know is the counter that Apple has on their website, is that live? Because that's amazing to watch. If that's like how fast apps are really being downloaded, and it looks like it is.
As far as I could tell, and I was wondering the same thing, It's a really cool animation that they're doing. And if you look at it and you kind of say, okay, well, it's at about, 730, and I refresh the page, it's about at that. It kind of changes a little bit slightly. So I think it's a little ahead or a little behind, just slightly.
You know what we need? We need to conduct a huge social experiment where we set a time and for like a 5-minute window and get everyone to not download an application. And then we can watch the web page and see if the little tablets quit flipping.
Actually, I'm just on the page hitting refresh and it's jumping between like 732 and 638 or something like that. So,
oh, it is. It's jumping around.
The second number is jumping up and down depending on how I refresh it. So,
okay, and I'm just letting the page roll, and so it's doing its little auto update thing, and I actually don't even know when I started doing this, so I'm wondering if it's just giving me a counter. Let's just refresh now, see how much it changes.
This is fun. You can play along at home if you want.
It didn't change very much. It jumped up a little bit from where it was.
So maybe they're doing something sneaky with cookies.
That could be.
Yeah. But it's pretty cool to see. It's a really cool animation. It's not Flash, so. I wonder if they're doing... they're probably not using CSS4, though, for it. They're probably doing a JavaScript.
Well, have you looked at it on your iPhone yet? CSS3.
No. Have you?
All right, well... I have my iPod Touch. I'm gonna.
Well, they have the CSS animation stuff on the iPod Touch too, and the iPhone. So
yeah,
it could
well,
be
I'm
the CSS
look at
animation.
It and see how cool it looks because
okay.
I can't.
Okay, yeah, go for it.
Anyway,
yeah.
The point is that it's amazing, and I think it's a pretty good probably estimation of how quickly. I just never really thought about it. You know, Apple talks about how many apps are being downloaded, but I never thought about breaking that down into apps per second or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's really fast. And when you see it going in the animation, it like really hits your brain. And you're like, wow.
Yeah. Well, they have, 15, how many, I want to say 15 million probably iPhones out there right now. Because they hit the 10
There's
million around.
By the way, it is cool watching the counter in iTunes, on my iPod Touch.
Yeah, so everybody do that as well. But let's
move on.
Do we want to talk about the? We'll probably have to save that because Adam, you have to get out of here soon for Easter stuff, right? So let's move on to our iPhone picks. Jeff, what do you have for us this week?
I have a pick that was recommended by an iPhone LE listener, actually.
Ooh,
and that's Movie Star, and the context for this is during one of the prior podcasts, I was lamenting the fact that the IMDb website totally sucks ass on anything other than an actual computer. So it's horrible to use on the iPhone. And so one of the listeners said, well, you should check out Movie Star, which is a free application that gives you a really nice iPhone interface to IMDb. So that's what I've been using to check out movie information, actor information on IMDb when I'm not at my computer.
Is that a free application?
That. It's an actual application. You can
is it
get
a free
it at the
application?
App- oh, yeah. Yeah, it's free.
Do Movie Star. Two words? Yeah.
I believe it's one word.
One word? Why do they do that? It's trendy, I guess. Yeah, Movie Star, one word.
It's trendy. Free. It's hip.
It is. Okay, so that is your pick, Movie Star. It is free in the App Store. Adam, what do you have for us?
I have the most addictive game that I think I've run across so far on the iPhone, which is saying a lot, because there's a lot of addictive games for the iPhone.
There are.
And it's a simple little game called Flight Control. And the concept is you have a runway and you have airplanes and helicopters and you have to land those on the runway without them crashing into each other. And that's all it is. You see how many you can land. But what's great about it is it really uses the touch interface. So you'll tap on a plane and you draw its flight path to the runway, and you can move planes around and change planes around, and so they come in from different sides of the screens and they have different patterns, so you have to land certain planes on certain runways based on color, and then it's just it sounds really simple, but it gets really complicated really fast and challenging, and it's just a lot of fun.
Can you crash the planes?
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is the game ends when if any two planes crash, that's it. That's the game. So you just try and see how many planes you can land.
Nice. It looks really cool. It's a pretty, well, February 26th it was released. It's 99 cents right now.
Yep. And yeah, that's right. It's been on sale for 99 cents for a long time, which is why I picked it up. I figured a buck, but it is really fun. And I really hope that right now it's just kind of the one runway, and you would think, well, it's going to get boring really fast, but it continues to stay challenging. And the one thing is you have kind of, you have jet planes, you have little biplanes that land on a side runway, and then you have helicopters that have a little helicopter pad. And then as you get up in the game, there's also kind of like a jumbo jet that travels faster than the regular jet. So you got, there's some timing involved, and just the user interface is what really got me, I think. And the graphics are kind of fun and cartoony. So, but I hope they expand and add some new levels and stuff in the future.
Is it, so it's a multi-touch, the way you land the planes, there are no tilting.
There's no tilting.
So how do you land it? You draw a line?
You draw a line from the plane to the runway, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay, yeah, I'm looking at that now in the store. It looks cool.
Just try it out. It's a buck, and it is a lot of fun, I guarantee you.
Yeah, it looks like it's getting a lot of really stellar reviews on 3,000 five-star reviews. So, looks great. Flight Control, 99 cents. And my app pick is just one that I couldn't stop playing with. It's called Looptastic. And I don't know how this slipped under our radar, but it's been on the App Store for a while, so it's not brand new. But there are quite a few different versions of the Looptastic. I think they're each $5. It's a loop application. So you get, it's a fantastic interface, the way they decided to do this. So you can take all these loops and put them together and make interesting songs with them. What you have is a row of little blocks that represent each loop, and you drag them up into one of three sections. And the higher up you place them, the louder the audio from each loop is, and you can use a crossfader to fade out between the different sections. And I have it plugged in to the mixer, so hopefully you guys can hear this. So, you hear that?
Oh, wow.
You can use a fader to just... And it's got some low pass and high pass stuff that you can do. So that is Looptastic.
And I totally had my groove thing on.
Yeah, you add the iGlowStick app and your recreational substance of choice, and you're good to go.
Well, I'm actually, it was my, and I'm going to stick this in there because, you know, shameless birthday plug. It was my birthday on Tuesday. And to celebrate, I'm going to Chicago with a bunch of friends to see a show, which consists of a bunch of really great Chicago electro DJs, as well as Crookers from Italy and Deadmau5. So that's it's that kind of stuff. I think it's like an 8-hour show. And cool. You guys were invited. Are you coming?
You know, I wish I was coming. Sorry, yeah. I can't be there.
I don't think I can make it in time.
Yeah. You could. I think you could probably take a plane and not make it.
You know, I'm close enough. I could take a plane and meet you there.
That'd be awesome. So you're going to do that then?
Yeah. Let me find my... Where's my driver's license? I need that to go by, get my ticket.
Yeah. So yeah, that is Looptastic. I was using the Electro Edition. There's also Looptastic Drum and Bass, Breakbeat, I think a few more. $5 for the full version of any of those. There are also light versions of, let me double check here. There's definitely,
it looks like the Electro is available for free.
Yes, there's an Electro version. I think you get one, one track, because there are different, you know, sets of loops that you can play with. So there's like Sirius, iElectric, No Gravity, Slider, that, you know, just the little names for each of the sets of loops. You can't actually put in your own loops, but, you know, as you heard, they're really well done, and they're inspired by artists like deadmau5 and that sort of thing. So yeah, check it out. $5, I love it. And yeah, that is my iPhone pick. So I should say that in our podcast marketplace, we have Audible. We have a free audiobook for you at audiblepodcast.com/iPhone. So if you're a new member, you can go to audiblepodcast.com/iPhone, get a free credit to an audiobook. And as always, check out iPhoneDaily.com for more news, tips, and reviews. You can share some iPhone tips with us by clicking the Contact Us link on the side of the page. You can also request us to review a product or an application. And you can check out our iPhone picks, links to those and prices and all that, and show notes at iPhoneLA.com/podcast. You can email feedback to podcast@iPhoneLA.com. And once again, Mr. Jeff Gamet joins us from the Mac Observer, iPod Observer. Where else are you, Jeff?
Design Tools Weekly, Layers Magazine, InDesign Magazine. I get around.
Yeah, and you're possibly going to write some stuff for us at some point, maybe.
Well, right now it's just a matter of I have to just move that up the list.
Yeah.
Yeah. But thanks for having me on.
Well, he's writing everywhere is the point.
Yes.
He's all around the internet.
I am. I'm like a virus, actually.
Yeah. A cuddly virus.
Yeah. I'm the virus you want to catch. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Jeff Gamet, the virus you want to catch. And you can also
have that put on your business cards right away.
The virus you want to catch.
Yeah. Note to self, virus you want to catch. Got it.
As well as twitter.com/jgamet. You'll want that on your business card because that is your Twitter.
Yes.
And Adam Christensen is at the MacCast, MacCast.com. And of course, twitter.com/MacCast. Thanks for being on, Adam.
Hey, thanks for having me again. This is fun.
Yep, and my Twitter is twitter.com/MichaelJohnston. And with that, another episode of the iPhone LA podcast is in the can.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Yuck, yuck, no. Who wants a stylus? We have to get them and put them away.